You are listening to The Pulse, Rod Murray's e-learning tech podcast, number 141.
Hello, this is Rod Murray. Glad to be back. That was a clip from Concerto No. 1 in D Major by Vivaldi. I thought the Spring Concerto would be very appropriate. I'll be playing the first movement of the concerto at the end of my podcast. I hope you enjoy it. This podcast is sponsored by Inside Higher Ed, the online source for news, opinion, and jobs for all of higher education. I also invite you to follow me on Twitter. My handle is RodsPods. As always, I post links to all the things we talk about on my show notes at www.rodspulsepodcast.com. Now for my main topic today, I'll be talking to Christopher Janes. He's the co-founder of a company called Mersive, and he now serves as the company's chief technology officer. As he'll mention, he came through the academic world, had a very interesting history and background in technology. We'll be talking about their main product. It's called Solstice. And in a nutshell, Solstice enables multiple users to connect simultaneously to a shared display using a range of devices over the Wi-Fi or Ethernet network. Sometimes we don't think of the big screen in the room as an e-learning technology. It's pretty common classroom technology, and we see digital signs around campus. But I think you'll see that this Solstice product can really put these devices to good use in improving e-learning technology across your campus. So we'll try to answer the questions. What is Solstice? How does it improve classroom pedagogy? Does it replace Apple TV? How's it different from Apple TV? What are the enterprise features? And I think what's really important these days is how can it be used in active learning spaces? What are network requirements? And how about distance learners? Can they connect? So without further ado, here's my interview with Christopher Janes. Chris, thank you so much for agreeing to talk with me today. I'm very excited to learn more about your product. Before we get started on those specifics, why don't you tell my audience a little bit about you and how you got involved with this company?
Yeah, sure. I actually I came out of academics. My PhD work was in computer vision and started a company actually on a different product. So we're a bit of a pivot story. The initial product was a multi-projector blending system. So we would take commodity consumer projectors, paint walls in an environment like a, you know, four walls and a floor, and turn that into a high resolution virtual environment by blending all the projectors together automatically with a push of a button. So that was a pretty interesting approach to that product. It was what I would call a critical success. It ended up running in the White House sit room and, you know, the Pentagon, lots of simulators, helicopter and, you know, F-16 simulators, things like that. And we started to move it into the consumer space, and what happened is I would end up in a lot of discussions about, wow, we have a, you know, a 30 million pixel wall on our conference room display now. How do we get data to that display palette? Because it's a really compelling surface to work with. So that's sort of how I discovered the world of audiovisual video switching and thought, wow, that seems old and a little bit archaic and based on, you know, non-commodity specialized video.
Now for the your main product, I guess now, is the Solstice product. Is that right? Can you explain to my audience what that's all about?
Yeah, sure. The idea with Solstice was that you could take any device that walks into a classroom or a conference room and move the display data or the visual data on that device wirelessly to a shared display. And when I say shared display, I mean that the display becomes like a collaborative work surface where I may come in and, you know, mirror my Android tablet to the screen and then say, hey, why don't we look at, you know, Rodney's laptop as well? And then you push a button and your laptop is on the screen side by side with mine. And it kind of removes, it does two things. It removes the video cable from the equation and the deployment side, but it really opens up some really compelling new educational use cases around, you know, interaction and collaboration without being limited by the single source video cable that we've been kind of constrained to, what I call now like the PowerPoint era, from the 90s to the, you know, late 2000s.
That's true. Many of us are still in the PowerPoint era, I'm afraid to say. But I know what you're talking about, because I know when iPads first came out, we got the connector and we were able to attach the iPad to the projection system. And then with Apple TV, we installed that in many places so that faculty could have a wireless connection to the display. So would you say this certainly sounds like a replacement for Apple TV? How would you explain the difference?
Yeah, no, that's a great question. I think those kind of use cases just show that there's a definite need to get rid of the video cable. You know, Apple TV is a replace the cable kind of product, and it's focused on really only iOS devices. So if you walk in with a Android tablet, then you're kind of out in the cold with an Apple TV. What we're trying to do is allow anyone to collaboratively post to the same display across any device. And then there's a whole back-end component to it as well. You can't just drop an in-room device and then be off to the races and expect it to work. There's a lot of use cases that aren't covered by a consumer device like an Apple TV. So for example, I used to teach, and I know what would happen if students could just arbitrarily start mirroring their devices to a screen in a hallway. So you have to have things like a visible key on the screen that guarantees people that are posting are within view of the screen. You have to have things like a sophisticated moderator mode that allows me to look down at a moderation queue and accept a student's post, but first preview it on my own local device before it goes to the screen. And then you have to have centralized management, because a lot of our customers now are starting to deploy hundreds of classrooms and dozens of, student study nooks. That has to be managed. It has to be maintained and monitored, all from a centralized location. So it really has to be enterprise class software that drives those endpoints.
Yes, that's one response from Apple was, this is a consumer device. It can't necessarily replace everything or do everything you want it to do in a classroom. I know what we did was sort of lock down the network so that you would need to be physically added to the network, say. So that really wouldn't work great with a lot of students in the room. Yeah. And then they came out with that change where now, like you said, you can project a PIN number. And then if you put in the PIN number, in terms of enterprise features, with the old way of handling these classrooms, like you said, it's mostly, cables and so forth. It's exciting to me that you have some enterprise features. Can you go into a little more depth about, how easy this is to maintain?
Yeah, sure. In fact, one of the things that we probably end up doing a lot, especially in the higher ed space, is configuring the software to fit different locations. And that's, to me, is it's a widespread adoption strategy for end users. So if I've got a tiered classroom, for example, I can go in our moderator dashboard and configure that room to be moderated. I can actually remove, if I know professors only want to share desktops and not necessarily mirror iOS devices, for example, in that space, I can disable features to simplify the user interface for those users. And you can do that on a per room basis. So, the idea that the software is really flexible and fits in different spaces has become really important for us, because our users are putting it in four or five different, very distinct use cases on the same campus. For example, student study rooms, tiered classrooms, opportunistic open spaces, or in a library. The enterprise stuff, it also refers to the ability to just share media more than one piece of media, because the use case for us is really to empower, learners through participation in the classrooms. And if I can't just call on a student arbitrarily and say, why don't we take a look at what you've done with your homework, put it up on the screen. And if that's not an easy use case, it boots me off the screen, for example, if that's Apple TV, to reconnect. That's not a very collaborative, participatory experience. It's very serialized and not really where we're headed with the technology. And if you also just look at how millennials and younger people are learning these days and interacting with their data, they're drawing on multiple sources of content continuously. Why would you serialize that content once they get into the classroom?
Speaking of different use cases, have you heard some, can you give us some examples of how educational institutions have put this into play? And I know we talk about flipping the classroom. I'm sure this would be a great tool for that. Are there anything that's special that you can point to about your product?
Yeah, sure. Yeah, so we're in a lot of distinct environments, and probably some of the more interesting ones outside of just the traditional classrooms are those TEAL, those team-enabled active learning spaces, where you've got 5 or 6 team tables, Solstice running at each table, so the students can come in and add, you know, in an ad hoc way, connect to their table display, share media, work with their peers, move media in and out of view, post multiple videos and content sources and collaborate, but then be able to move that to the front screen by just simply disconnecting, connecting to the front screen in a couple clicks to throw it to the professor's front view. In our roadmap, actually, we're going to enhance that user experience by allowing you to create display groups. And when you have a display group, we're basically going to build a software video switcher that allows any screen to be able to push to all other screens within that group. So imagine a use case where, you know, like table one has done an outstanding job of their homework this time. Why don't we go ahead and look at it on all our team tables? And then the professor, who is really in that environment acting more like a guide through the educational experience, just pushes the media to all screens at once so that everyone can look at it. That's an interesting one. We've also got some people that are putting us into common spaces to coincide with their digital signage deployments, which I find really compelling, because the big vision of Solstice isn't just, I want to transform the display endpoint and allow it to be more collaborative and accessible. I really want to transform all of your displays so that they become something greater than the parts, so that their campus display infrastructure becomes shared and accessible. So when I see people putting, you know, Solstice endpoints in these common areas where students are normally used to just looking at the message of the day and maybe some digital signage, they can now to say, oh, wait, that's a collaboration screen. Why don't we launch our clients, sit here in these soft armchairs, post media, and get some homework done in between classes, and then disconnect and walk off, and it goes back to digital signage. That's actually, I've seen that in about 3 different campuses already.
You know, you've anticipated my questions, because that's one thing that occurred to me. We have a digital signage system, but I was thinking, maybe we can kill 2 birds with 1 stone here and use them in multiple ways. So you've already answered that.
Yeah, you definitely can. It's funny because, you know, we're almost like the yin to the yang of the digital signage initiatives that were so big in the 90s and 2000s. It's a different view of what your display landscape should become. And if you look at what happened with printing and with computes and disk storage, it's all become shared and infrastructural rather than endpoint deployments. So your displays haven't become that yet, but that's the transformation that's happening now, that anybody can access your display landscape as long as they have the credentials to do that. And they can do it in a way that's almost seamless from their devices, rather than having to, you know, think about where that cable is, or do I have the appropriate adapter because I forgot to bring the right device to the meeting?
Right. I guess it's incumbent on the IT folks at the institution to make sure that their Wi-Fi setup is up to par. Are there any specifications that are important to look at?
Yeah, that's a great question. And it kind of speaks to what's the difference between a consumer video streaming protocol like an Apple TV or an enterprise grade one. So things like our ability to be tolerant to network jitter and things are very important to us. We don't have really, really high expectations of your Wi-Fi. Our compression engine, believe it or not, can get over 500-to-1 compression ratio, which I'm really proud of, because we're able to pump HD video, you know, multiple sources at the same time to a single screen without imploding your network. That's huge for us. And all those settings actually can be set up in the IT dashboard. So you could go in and manage the amount of bandwidth that's provisioned per display, and then we will degrade gracefully to be tolerant for your particular network settings. So no, we don't have major requirements. If you've got 802.11ac, for example, we're fine. 802.11n also works well. The throughput requirements aren't massive because of our compression ratios are so high. We've got some sort of secret sauce on taking those high compression ratios, but guaranteeing that you have good image quality for things like text. That's stuff deep in our secret sauce. And in fact, when you're not even moving your screen around, so for example, if I'm showing PowerPoint or something and I'm on a slide that's not changing, we actually go to 0 bandwidth utilization. So we won't pump data when we don't need to. Now, Apple TV will, because they don't care. They're assuming, look, it's you and, you know, your 2 kids or something on the home network. very different constraints. We built it from the scratch, though, to be an enterprise-ready software.
You know, it's funny. It just I recalled stepping into like a consumer store that sells home theater equipment and so on. And I was just curious. I was going to see, you know, I would like to send a signal to a screen that's across my living room, but I don't want to run cables. And his answer was, oh, you can't send HDTV. You can't send it wirelessly. And I knew better. So I just walked away. But
No, I find it funny. I mean, it is such a rapidly changing landscape. It, even just 3 years ago, let's see. So 5 years ago, I wrote, and maybe even more than that now, maybe 6 years ago, I wrote the original NSF proposal about this concept that said, look, if you plot the available bandwidth over time and compression technology over time, there will be a point in the world's history where you could push HD video over Wi-Fi. I mean, it's obvious statement when you really think about it, unless something dramatically changes on those curves, which is a bad bet to make. So the National Science Foundation, you know, 5-6 years ago, on my review panel, of course, you know, I had one naysayer on that panel that still didn't quite believe it. I'm not sure that's possible, right? Now I don't have to evangelize. I go out to customer sites all the time now. I mean, people are used to watching Game of Thrones on their iPads at home. That helps. That's this big inversion that's happened. So I go to a big financial in New York, or we're down in the South meeting with someone in the government or something, and they say, look, we've already decided the video cables are going away. We're not going to put them in our new conference rooms. We don't want them in our learning environments. We don't want them to define how our meetings are happening. I think there's been a big sea change in the last couple of years. I don't have to go in anywhere and explain why that's a nice thing to have. I think people get that now. So it has changed quickly. Now it sounds like it hasn't caught up in the malls yet, but
right.
That happened.
Also, I was poking around your website a little bit, and I didn't see any in-depth explanation, but how about distant end users? What if you have a class and you have some students in a remote location? Are they able to connect?
Now, that's a really good question. So today we focused very much on the in-room use case. Part of it was that I just felt like there was so little technology focused on enabling learners or teachers to share and interact with one another's media and content quickly while they're in the room. So if you look at things like Link or Adobe Connect, all that stuff really focuses on the distant use case. Mm-hmm. Now, that being said, if you're on the same VLAN, if you're able to be on the same logical network, then Solstice will work today. We've added a browser ability to look in on a room at native resolution. So if you've got students that couldn't make it to the lecture, they today could launch a browser. Presumably they get an email for the pod that's, you know, being used for the lecture. And then they can type in that IP address and they'll be able to view the session at native res in a browser from just about anywhere, as long as they can get to it via the internet.
That's amazing. That's pretty cool.
Yeah, we did that mostly primarily for higher ed. Now, this year, and I can't completely tip my hand or I'll get people upset here at Immersive, but we've got some plans to support what I'll call much more ad hoc participation across rooms. So imagine this use case where, you know, a lecture is about to begin and I'm a student and I'm trying to get across, you know, let's say Wharton's campus, who has tiered classrooms and student study rooms deployed. And I'm not able to make it all the way to the tiered classroom. So I dive into a Solstice-enabled student study room. Shouldn't I be able to connect to that pod and bring that lecture to me, in a sense, so that I'm now, those two endpoints are unified? Synchronized, I guess I'll call it. So when I want to participate, I can participate from that location and I can see everything that's happening as though it's happening in that student study room. That's a big vision because it starts to tie together, you know, that pixel landscape that was part of the initial vision. But I think it's a really, really compelling use case. And it really does allow you to leverage more than just the in-room collaboration experience. It turns your campus into a, you know, almost like this seamless landscape of synchronized displays.
Interesting. Now, this is a future feature.
That's right. It's under development now.
Okay.
So I hope to make an announcement shortly around InfoComm about that feature.
Since we're talking about the future, it seems like it wouldn't be very very much of a stretch to add lecture capture.
Yeah, now that's an interesting one. I'm in design with some of our bigger higher ed partners now on a feature that would allow you to, you know, that browser look-in I described that allows you to see at native resolution the screen. There's two components to it. One, why wouldn't you allow students to just record that in a distributed way? We'll never be like a full-on cloud-based session recording and audio sync system. I don't think we need to go there. But for students that just want to capture a lecture that they participated in, maybe make lightweight annotation, that's certainly feasible for most of our end users to do that through that browser view. We're also looking at something, what I'll call like the time slider. Because if you think about how lectures flow, if one of my students says, well, geez, that slide 3 slides ago would be nice to see. Well, you know, if you're already recording it or you've got a buffer locally of that video coming back from that screen, why wouldn't I allow a student to just slide back in time to take a look at what happened in the lecture 3-4 minutes ago? That becomes really, really interesting because now you're basically a DVR.
Wow, it seems like you've got a lot of possibilities. I in terms of full disclosure here at U-Sciences, we're not using your product. We are looking into it, but I have seen it demoed, and I was very impressed. Another question I have: you answered the one about some of the enterprise features. Cost, of course, is always an issue here in higher ed in general.
Yeah,
I think you realize. And granted, we wouldn't necessarily have to buy a lot of hardware like we would for other types of solution. How is it priced? You know, you mentioned a classroom that might have multiple screens. Is it priced per screen or per classroom or per user?
That's a great question. You could buy it two ways. So if you've already got a PC in the classroom, so if there's already a lectern PC in the room, you buy just the software to do that. And if that PC has multiple display output capabilities, we don't charge you on a per screen basis. So I'll give you a couple examples. We have some users that will have a Lectern PC. They'll run Solstice as a software instance on that PC, but it actually has a dual head display output. So they have two big screens and it makes a very large workspace for students to share into and things. That's a single license of software. It's sold as a perpetual license with a 20% maintenance. First year is free. You can buy it as a small group edition. I'm trying to make sure I quote numbers properly. That's about $800, $799. And it's $999 for the unlimited user edition, meaning any number of students can connect simultaneously and share media. You could also buy it in a pod appliance form factor, which is a very small little appliance box with an HDMI output. Think of it as like the Solstice version of an Apple TV.
Mm-hmm.
That's actually the exact same price. So the hardware is provided, you know, it's almost like we throw the hardware in for free in that form factor. I did that because I really wanted to take the complexity out of the hands of, you know, for users that don't have a PC and don't have to think about that. It's the same price. You just go get that if you don't want to deploy it on your own PC.
Right. It seems like the hardware these days is a commodity item. It's probably not that expensive to produce.
Yeah, it's not bad. And we're able to ride Moore's Law, which is, I mean, we're software guys, even though we sell it in an appliance form factor, unlike a lot of like the AV competitors, we don't special build non-commodity gear to make things happen. We write clever software. So what happens is every 3 years or something, I'm going to, you know, double my performance and half the price of the hardware.
Well, listen, this has been great. It's been, I think, a good review of the product. It's those who are considering, you know, renovating their classrooms, you know, think twice, I think, before you put in a lot of cabling. So it's worthwhile, I think, you know, taking a look at Solstice.
Yeah, and you can grab a trial off our website, the software instance. You can download that for free for 30 days just to give it a shot, or just reach out to us and if you're already in the middle of a project or thinking about a deployment, we can maybe just get you a loaner pod to take a look.
Great. Well, listen, thanks a lot, Chris. I really appreciate
Sure.
the time.
Yeah, thank you.
Well, I hope you enjoyed the interview. That's it for today. Of course, I'll have a link to Immersive Solstice on my show notes. So stay tuned to hear the full Concerto No. 1 by Vivaldi, the spring movement from the Four Seasons. Until next time, have a great week.
that's it for today's episode. Thank you very much for listening. Don't forget to give Rod feedback. You can leave comments on his blog or send email to rod@rodspulsepodcast.com. The preceding audio commentary is the product of the author, Dr. Rodney Murray, and does not represent the official viewpoint of the University of the Sciences or any other institution or company. Yes.